Hey, welcome back to the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. We're the house cleaners. We're like the hotel house cleaners of public discourse. Just knock, knock, housekeeping. You need to clean up your rhetoric.
Who's there?
We're here to do that. I am Dr. Dan, rhetorician, late night comedy writer, founder of Rhetoric Warriors. The podcast does three things. We talk to comedians about their careers in politics and their uncensored comedy, which is super fun. I convert conservatives and sometimes millennials, because I feel like both those extremes kind of get off the path a little bit. So that's fun too. And I talk to persuasion pros and rhetoricians about persuasion and how to do that stuff out in the world. Today is another episode of Persuasion Pros. And I have a guy here that I met through somebody a couple weeks ago or last week on LinkedIn, through Lunch Club, through something, the app network in the world. His name's Mitchell Levy. He's a thought leader. Looks like he's got a big career, long time career in doing this kind of stuff. I would call him Persuasion Pro. Has a very interesting brand, Credibility Nation, which wants to help people win the credibility wars over dubious nation. Good word choices. I like it. Everybody, welcome Mitchell Levy.
Hey, Dan. Hey, I like to use the word Levy in my pronunciation, but however, the fact that you're pronouncing my name at all is a good thing.
Levy, that's good. I've got a buddy who, his name's Mario, according to him, and the whole world disagrees.
Okay.
He goes to Starbucks and he'll write Mario and he'll be like, it's Mario, and they'll say Mario. And he's like, okay, whatever.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. So good to have you on. Thanks for jumping on. We barely know each other, but it's cool to run into other persuasion professionals in the world.
What's your definition of a persuasion professional?
Somebody that's using technique, words, some type of strategy to get something out into the world, to sway the world towards something.
Yeah, okay. I could buy that. I'm kind of curious about the definition of the word persuasion, so I'm just going to check that out while we're talking.
Yeah, persuasion, typically, when you look up the definitions, has more of a intellectual or cognitive skew to it. Like it's done, you know, persuading people through arguments and information. I expand it. I don't really like the word influence. I don't think it's strong enough. And I like the word rhetoric a lot, but nobody knows what it means. So,
I'm a big rhetoric fan.
I jump into persuasion usually.
Oh, got it. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. It as a noun, it says the action or fact of persuading someone or of being persuaded to do or believe something. That's interesting. Yeah.
Not a great definition.
Yeah, it's fascinating because there could easily be a negative connotation of that.
Yeah, and I think that's mostly when people find out I have a PhD in rhetoric. Most people think of the word rhetoric as a negative. And the first thing I do is kind of rescue it and pull it back and say, rhetoric is just the study of highly designed messages that are there to try to increase your effectiveness.
I like rhetoric better. I think I mentioned to you when we talked last time, we did this book. So one of the things I do, a book publisher, we publish over 750 books. So we did this book for Professor George Gopin, who is a professor emeritus of rhetoric. And that was the first time I've run across somebody who had the PhD in rhetoric. And, you know, this is an awesome book because it's 140 aha messages of, in his case, the reader's expectations approach, Gopin's reader's expectation approach to the English language.
Okay, I like it. Yeah, rhetoric has a split history. It's got an English writing degree. You can get it in an English department, or you can get it in a communication studies / speech department. And so it's either, you know, tied back to oral rhetoric with the Greeks, or go back to written rhetoric. And they're a little bit different, but they work with the same materials. It's still about persuasive messaging. It's like he's from the English departments.
Got it. Sorry, just curious because I want to make sure what I was signing up for.
I can't promise what you're signing up for. I do half comedy, half intellectual. I just love to talk to people who are trying to, like I said, use messages and techniques to get stuff going in the world.
Perfect.
You're clearly doing that. So run your background for us a little bit. Orient people to Mitchell Levy.
Oh, there we go. So there's, I'll do a really quick snapshot of stuff. Stuff is things that I've done in the past that add to who I am now. And then we'll talk about who I am now. So I've sat on the board of a public firm for 9 years. I've created 20 companies in Silicon Valley. Happily married, have a son that's 23, been married for 32 years. As a book publisher, have published over 750 books. I've created 4 executive education programs at higher academic institutions. I've created and run 4 conferences for the largest conference company in the world during the dot-com days. And I think that's past. So let's throw that behind us.
That's a lot, though. Like, you just went through a lot of stuff, dude.
Oh, well, it was
a lot of work.
I like to do things in a parallel way. Like, if you did all that sequentially, I'd be really old, right? So, and so I still run a book publishing company now, and that's what got me to where I am in terms of what I'm doing. What happened is as a book publisher, we did a lot of the traditional stuff in the early days, started in 2005. In 2007, so traditional stuff, meaning people would write books, they'd come to us, we'd publish, we'd make money based on sales. Now, in 2017, I did my first TED Talk. And the one thing it helped me do is break out of the mold of wherever I was living at the time. And I kind of realized that we were serving the wrong audience. I did not want to serve the audience of people at that stage who would write their own books. It was at the time that I needed to, the audience I wanted to serve were the people who were already successful, wanted more success, and wanted somebody to ghostwrite the book for them.
Sure. Yeah. There's a lot of people out there I've run into in business who, you know, in mentally they've created a lot, but translating that into some type of produced messaging, yeah, they break right there.
So that's what, so 2018, I created the writing school. We picked up 10 clients. In 2019, I actually flew to Miami to one of my friend's 2-day branding class, and came out with the brand Global Credibility Expert. And it was 2 months after that I had a Napoleon Hill moment. I just woke up and I go, hey, Napoleon Hill, 500 millionaires. And he wrote Think and Grow Rich. If Mitchell Levy interviewed 500 thought leaders on credibility, I'd have a book. So one of the things I did is while still running the publishing company, I interviewed 500 people in between 2019, 2020. So it took me about 12 months. And I do have the book. Right. So here we are. It's an international bestseller in 5 countries called Credibility Nation.
Which 5? Five countries?
Oh, I have no idea at the moment. US, Canada are 2 I remember. I can't remember the other 3.
Not a weird one like Luxembourg or something like that?
Oh, not that I'm aware. They're typically, because it's an Amazon bestseller in 5 countries, it's typically locations where Amazon has a headquarters, a location. I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. I don't know if India is one of the, anyhow, there were 5 countries and I know, remember US and Canada being one. UK was another.
Okay.
Germany might've been another, but now you're tapping really cobwebs.
It's so, fine. I'm just joking around with you. So
no, I love that.
500 interviews. That's a lot of content.
It's a lot of content.
How long's the book? Like 18,000 pages?
No. I'm not a big fan. I don't take interviews and publish them, but that's not what we do, right? That's not what I do, right? So when you look inside the book, you know, we do color. I got QR codes that point to videos of me talking about this section. The primary content is 140 bite-sized quotes. Very similar to the Gulpin book, right? It is what this book talks about, very similar to understanding the definition, since you don't like the definition of the word rhetoric or persuasion as is, I realized that the definition of the word credibility needs to change.
Okay.
It is in the dictionary, it is only 1/3 accurate. So let me tell you what it is today. The definition of the word credibility in the dictionary is the quality in which you are trusted. Now, let me tell you how I think that came about. In the old days being prior to the internet, or at least prior to the World Wide Web, we were told what authors we were going to read by the book publishers. We were told what music we were going to listen to by the recording studios, and we were told what actors we were going to watch by the broadcast media. So now we have the internet. We're not told. There's not a single gatekeeper that says, so this is what the publishers would do.
Right.
By the way, this is the author in this space. Are you ready? They have credibility, which means, trust me, they're the people whose book you should buy to solve your problem, and we'll make money on book sales.
Sure.
So that's why credibility is, in my mind, defined as the quality in which one is trusted. Now, the fact that we all now have cameras and microphones, and anyone, we don't have the gatekeeper any longer. Credibility is not just about trust. It's also about the quality in which you know somebody and the quality that you like them. So that phrase, know, like, and trust. So credibility is the quality that you know, like, and trust somebody. And by know, it's that I know of you, not that I know you.
Okay. So let me break in a little bit and have some discussion with some of this, because it's cool stuff. So when you say the know somebody, like in rhetoric, that's expertise. Like, do I give you an expertise credibility? Do I know enough about you that I feel like I can judge your areas of expertise? So like in your opening salvo about yourself, you ran through a bunch of stuff, like all the companies, book publishing, Silicon Valley, lots of different areas of expertise, right? So which were those, like, how do you vet those in your system? Like, how do I feel like I know you versus like I've gotten a pitch version of you?
It's a great question. And let me dissect your question.
You're out there a lot, right? Like, you have TED Talks, you have books, you have lots about you. Is that the authentic Mitchell? Or is that a presented version of you that's trying to create credibility?
Nah, there was only one version of me. And that's probably one of the most relevant components of where we need to be today. We should never be the person that we think the world needs to see us to be. We need to be us. Now, if us sucks,
yeah, what about that?
And we don't like us, then we can change. Right. But the person you see here, this is the same person you see when I'm with family, I'm with friends, I'm with clients. Right. This is you get the same person. That makes me authentic. Now,
you think private and public self are the same? You want to equate those?
Yes.
But there's things about you as a private person in your private life that you don't put out in the public.
There are definitely things about me in my private life that I don't put in public. And up until being the global credibility expert, where I understood what that means, one of those things was politics. I would not talk politics in the past because that was not appropriate in a business sense, not appropriate to me. So what I'll say is I still don't talk politics. I can tell you what I don't like. To me, hate is not a word that belongs in the human vernacular. It's not a notion that belongs in terms of humanity. If you watch the TED Talk, my TED Talk is, we are losing our humanity and I'm tired of sitting around and watching it. And hate is one of those words. For instance, in the political realm, I have friends which are Republican and they hate my friends who are Democrat and vice versa, and they don't even know each other. And sure. I could just tell you that's wrong, right? That just, you know, and so the old me would not talk politics. I won't talk politics, but I will, I mean, necessarily, but if there's a political realm that focuses more on hate than otherwise, I'll be vocal about that. You know, I play Pokemon Go. Now, if I'm in and I still love walking around and playing Pokemon Go, and particularly in Silicon Valley with engineers, they love that when they see me do it and I talk about it. I won't not talk about it, But in most, if I'm sitting with clients of a Fortune 500 company, I probably won't bring it up because it won't be relevant. But if they see me on my phone and say, what are you doing? Are you texting? I'm like, well, actually, there's a great Pokestop here.
Right. And so manage your public self. I mean, clearly everybody has to manage a public self. Like there's no way to take everything that you are as a private person, all the realities, like most people curate all their failures out of their public self.
Oh no, but failures are fantastic.
Are they faux failures or are they real failures?
Real failures. Real failures are fantastic.
Like what? Give me some examples.
Let me set context. So I realized that Credibility Nation, what I needed to set up was something that was far bigger than I've ever done before. So I've having set 20 companies, I typically find a partner, we create a company, we make money. We either at some point in time decide we don't want to do it together. We either let it disappear or we sell it. That's been my existence. It's been fun. I love doing that. With Credibility Nation, what I recognize is there are more people in the world that are not credible than credible. There are more people in the world that are dubious than credible. So this is now my life mission.
Give me your definition of dubious person.
I will do that. Let me do life mission. Before I die, we will tip the scale between those in the world that are credible and those that are dubious.
Okay.
All right. So,
got it. That's a nice little visual. More people on the right. Dubious.
We're still going to come up with, I'm still going to give you a public failure, right? So to me, the reason I came up dubious in a short word is the opposite of credible. The reason I came up with that is that Credibility Nation as an entity, as an entity needed an arch rival. And I didn't want to have a real person, place, or thing. And so I came up with a word that was a negative, but also fun. So I could honestly say every day, at least once a day, I'll step into Dubious Nation and I'll do something dubious. Now, what makes me credible is I either find it and self-correct it. So for instance, by the way, when you said what countries were you in, if one of those that I mentioned because I was guessing is wrong, I'd feel like I was dubious. The fact that I didn't know all five, I mean, it's a good question. I should probably know. Makes me a little bit dubious.
So
it's not a bad thing.
Is deceptive dubious then? Like, what are your criteria for dubious? Like when I talk about unethical rhetoric and unethical rhetoricians, like I have a playbook. I'm like, here's how you recognize these techniques that unethical rhetoricians use. And one is like deception. Hey, Dan, I don't think you were doing deception.
No, it's definitely not deception. There are definitely, if you want to give me control of the screen, I'll show you the definition of credibility. If not, I'll read it off to you.
Yeah, just read it real quick. It's fine.
All right. So there are 10 components associated with credibility. So the three pillars are know, like, and trust. Under being known, it's being a servant leader. It's showing your intent and your commitment to do the right thing. It's having integrity.
So that's morality, though. That's not being known.
As I mentioned, it's not about the fact that I know of you. It's that I know you. So yes, it is a very specific focus of the word known, but it's not know of. It's not that I know you. It's not that I know Dan French. It's that I know who you are and what you stand for. If you want to say morality and we don't want to use the word known, we could do some other word, but that's what I mean by know, like, and trust is that I know of.
And this is one of the things I kind of like about what you're doing. I think you've, launched yourself into a really big area of rhetoric, which is ethos.
Yes, I have.
Which, we talked about this a little bit before, that it's got a 2,500 year history of being studied by the Greeks and the Romans and all the way up through, the world wars and modern age, tech age, industrial age. Ethos is like one of the superpower components. In my book, 21 Colosseums of Persuasion, there's a chapter on ethos. Because if you establish ethos with somebody or any group or anything where they see you in a positive light, no matter what it is, then you are now more persuasive. So you've launched into this and you're adding your own you know, you're setting your own terms, you're making your own definitions. You've got a whole, you know, world of your own for ethos.
Yes. Yes. So under being like, by the way, it is, if you want to be like, this is really simple. One, share the stage. You're doing it right now by bringing me on and showing me homage, whether it's you say good things or bad things, overall, it's a good thing and to help focus on rhetoric. So sharing your stage. The second is showing respect by showing up when you show up. And to me, that's coming early, coming prepared, coming with your heart, right? People just don't, surprisingly, people don't do that.
Yeah.
I'll show you trust. The way I define trust is integrity, authenticity, vulnerability. And here's something that came out of the interviews that really shocked me. As a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you the two things that came out of the interviews in terms of credibility that one, which is a pleasant surprise, which was the thing under being known is being a servant leader. The one that shocked me under being trustworthy is being coachable. It is shocking to me how many people are not coachable. And if you're not coachable, you can't be credible. So you asked me, what is dubious? Dubious would be the opposite. So if you're not a servant leader, you're dubious. If you are not coachable, you're not only not credible, you're not only dubious, you're not somebody I want to know or be around at all, right? And so, you know, the terms integrity and authenticity are really interesting words. Some people have said to me, so Dan, you'll love this. People have said to me, Mitchell, why are you going after credibility? Why are you not going after integrity or authenticity? And I go, by the way, when I first was asked that question, or sometimes when people ask me the question, why is credibility important? My immediate response was, why is breathing air and drinking water important? Right. But when somebody says, why integrity versus authenticity? Why not that instead? The answer is really simple. One can have integrity and have authenticity, and they have the integrity to be an absolute asshole to hurt other people. You can have that integrity and authenticity to do that. And you are truly have integrity and authenticity because you're living to your word. You're doing exactly what you say. You need, in order to be that in a positive way, you need a framework. And the framework that sits around you being able to do the right thing, to be a servant leader, to be coachable, to do all the things, that framework is one in which I've created with the word credibility.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's a, again, in rhetoric, that's a God term. You know, there are God terms and devil terms. That's one of the concepts you'll find in here. And that's a nice little split, right? It tells you everything right there. And credibility is a God term. Like if you have it, then, you know, there's a lot of things that people assign to you. You've pulled out dubious, you know, as your devil term, which is a cool word. You know, I like that word. I like the fact that you put it in there. It's really interesting though, like watching credibility. I've done a lot of work with business guys who want credibility, but when you actually look at their true self, their accurate personal self, or even their business self, I'm like, well, do you want, you know, a crafted version of yourself in public that's going to get you a certain set of goals? Or do you want an authentic self in public? Because most people can't handle their fully authentic self being put into public. And you see this all the time, even with heroes in our culture, things will start to come out about them. Like Martin Luther King at one point, you know, one of the dubiousnesses they assigned to him is that he had affairs as part of, you know, somewhere, and that's hard to put in to the mythos of the hero. Gandhi, there's one little scene in his movie where he goes off on his wife. Like he almost sounds abusive because he gets upset because she won't be a servant enough. And so you don't really think about that very often in his story, those dubious elements. So when you look at this stuff, like for you as the guy now, the face of Credibility Nation, are you now like expected to be like Mr. Credible? Like, is that your, you that's now what you need?
So, well, yes. Let me say yes with a caveat. The caveat is that I need to be credible where appropriate. I need to live my life in that sort of way. And when I step into dubiousness, I either need to catch myself or surround myself with accountability partners that'll let me know. So Dan, the coolest part. So when I did this last TED Talk, it was all through COVID, and I actually then flew. I braved the only time I flew during COVID. I braved flying to Vegas to actually get on the stage and give the talk. It was that important. One of the sets of people I practiced it with was with my mom and my wife. And so
those are separate people, right?
Let's hope so. Because if we're not, then I should be living in another state.
Hey, I'm from Kentucky originally, so I just have to ask. Comes up in my mind.
And so one of the positive outcomes of practicing with them is that every now and then they both separately will call me out on something that I did dubious. Like, son, we got to tell you, or honey, you know, you did something dubious the other day. And I have to tell you, whether it's your mom or your wife, you just can't argue. When they start with those words, you just have to listen and go, yep, that's what I did. Sorry, yeah, got to fix
it. That's a nice indictment. It's kind of a sweet word. It's much more acceptable than what an asshole you are. You know, what a horrible person. Now you're being dubious.
Dan, I particularly like it because one of the constructs as I was writing the book, one of the things that I was focused on is the concept of heaven or hell, right? And I don't like, and so I actually did this in the TED Talk. I don't like the concept of absolute right and absolute wrong, right? And so, you know, theoretically, you're going to heaven if you're from a certain religion and you practice a certain way, otherwise you're going to hell. Well, you know, you can't be 100% credible I guess you could be 100% credible and you could be 100% dubious, but human nature is we're always somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Do you have a credibility quotient? Do you have some type of number that people are trying to hit?
It's a absolutely beautiful question. And I'm actually working with a firm right now. They do corporate culture, and we haven't deployed it, but we're close to the end of deploying a credibility assessment, which will, and there'll be two versions, one at the individual level and one at the corporate level. Here's what's interesting. I don't know. So this is me publicly talking. I know what I need to do. I need to tip the scale. And it's not going to be something I do. It's going to be something that we do. We need to do this together. Human nature, we as humans need to do this together. If we want to be more humane to each other, if we want to be better, we need to make this happen. So I've got a book. I've got the TED Talk. I have a membership community called Credibility Nation. What I'm going to say is, I don't know if that's it. I don't know if it's the assessment. I don't know the things I need to do to make this happen. One of the public mistakes I made, I don't mind talking about it, is my first implementation of Credibility Nation was simply using a site called Thinkific. It was a series of courses. And after about 4 or 5 months, it was pretty obvious that a series of courses does not make a community. I think it's pretty obvious now when I look at it in retrospect, what a silly idea it was. But I still tried to do it and it didn't work. And so starting, you know, April 1st, I now have a community-based software that also has courses as part of that. Right. Sure. And I don't mind it. Most in the past, there are people who say, oh, I never make mistakes. I made a mistake. Right? That's okay. I was rushed. I needed something out there. This is what my friends were recommending to go to Thinkific. Thinkific's membership community is not a great community. I mean, functionality wise, it didn't work the way it needed to at the time. And so silly me. Okay. That's fine.
Let me ask you this. Are you a social issue guy? Like, are you doing this for social issue purposes, or is you doing this mainly as a business?
It's an actually beautiful question. Most people don't ask that question. It has to be both. By definition, It has to be both, because the way the world exists is one in which we need to trade things for, we need to trade commodities, either a barter system or sell a service. We need to, there needs to be a financial component to it. So the problem that I see when I look at all of the heart-centered only movements is how they ultimately will fund themselves is through donations. And donations work when times are good, and donations are not, don't work when times are not good. So we need to actually, for something to work, we need a business-oriented component. We need to actually do something that's business-focused, but also social-focused. And I'm sure there are great examples of things where it's worked in the past, but that's what I'm trying to do, is create something that changes the core, the fabric of who we are, but also can make money. So the things I've done so far, 20% of profit from Credibility Nation goes to nonprofits. For me at the moment, it's still owned 100% by me. At some point in time, once this thing gets going and it's self-sustaining, I'll figure out how we, the people, own it. But I don't know what that is yet. And so I could say that is the goal. That's where I'm heading. It needs to be owned by those people who want to try it, not by a single person. I don't want to be king of Credibility Nation from that perspective.
I like it. Now, it's a question that everybody gets, because we live in a capitalist culture and you've got to pay your bills. And if you're going to spend all your time on something, it has to have a business component. As soon as you wrap business into things, though, you look at credibility, businesses and corporations and things like that are one of our villains, right? Anybody trying to sell something to you, salespeople are one of our villains. Not completely, not across the board, but they definitely have that component. If you look at our movies, so many of it is, some greedy person, or some corporation, that doesn't care about people. It's a very common villain in our mythology and our storytelling. And so whenever you add that in, people are going to give you credibility hits, right? Like, oh, you're just doing this, and I see this a lot with a lot of marketing people and a lot of thought leaders now have added on a lot, and corporations have done this, a lot of social issue talk. Like if you watch sports on the weekend, whatever the companies are that are advertising are just, we're doing so much for you. We're donating to this program. We're running this program. I'm like, well, wow, you guys are great. You are great human beings for a corporation. And it's become a thing where corporations use that as credibility gain for social issue caring and social issue justice and things like that. And so it's part of that those two fusions are part of our culture. Just curious as to how you walk that line, because I don't think you come across as like a super marketing, like just out here to get money. I think you authentically are a social good, person who wants to create social good. How do you walk that line though? Like when did you become this aspirational social good, wanting to help humanity guy?
It's a really tough line to walk. And there's a story that'll come to mind that I'll share that perfectly fits there. It was how I got there was interesting. So I've now done, of the 500 interviews, I've now fine-tuned a product. It's actually, I call it a cred reel. It's 5 questions in 5 minutes where you can actually watch an interview and get to know, like, and trust somebody in 5 minutes to really see them. And I've fine-tuned that. And one of the things that came out of it is the fact that of the people I interviewed, it's now up to 596 people. Of the people I interviewed, 98% of people cannot articulate who they serve and the pain point they address in 10 words or less, 98%. So it turns out it's one of my superpowers is to make that happen. And so somewhere around interview 100-ish, I realized I should be getting video testimonials as I talk to people. I now have 400 plus video testimonials. And Dan, they all sort of go like this. Mitchell, I've been looking for clarity for the last 2, 4, 10, 12 years, and you gave it to me in 5 minutes. Thank you. All right. So at first, I was letting the way the world used to work, work the way I was work. And I was thinking, hey, I walk on water. This is really cool. I could change somebody's life in 5 minutes. Now, by the way, for those listening, it might've been somewhere in the first 5 minutes that we were synchronously talking that came out. But when somebody signs up for an interview, they got a 16 minute video on how to prepare. They may have watched previous episodes. They spent more time with me asynchronously than they did synchronously. So the amount of time that I spent with them was smaller compared to how much time they actually spent with me. After a little bit of time, when you're sitting there and 50 or 60 people are telling you to walk on water, you could believe it, or you could realize, hey, can I teach this to other people? Is there a way in which people could learn how they can actually articulate, I call it a CPOP, customer point of pain, how they can articulate it better, faster? Do I need to be the person who's the only one doing it? I happen to have expertise at being able to fine tune it and giving people those words. However, I've created an online course. And in that online course, people can teach themselves and now they're teaching others. And it's a half hour course. Dan, we're not talking about learning a lot of shit. We're talking about very quickly focusing on what is your purpose and being able to articulate our purpose. We've been taught not to articulate our purpose out loud because that's negative. So it was somewhere in there that I realized that I need to help the world re-educate themselves in the business world, in this case, that it is okay to say what you do with purpose as part of it. Like if somebody has a job and you're getting paid, but you hate what you do, first of all, the word hate shouldn't be used, but if you hate what you do, find something else. Do something else. Do what you love. Do what you enjoy. If you can do what you love and get paid for it, that's even better. And so why don't you make sure you understand who you are, how you want to serve, how you can live a life that you love living and get paid for it? Because those people are heart-centered. They think that selling is a four-letter word. And that's not true either, right? Because we do need to actually live off of money and be able to pay for the goods that we have. And what one person in my TED talk, I think his comment was taken down, but his initial comment on my TED talk is, you capitalist pig, I've always given away everything I do and I make more than enough money. And so I can't believe you're talking about trying to make money. Now, by the way, it was a TED talk. And so, you know, I don't talk about anything that way. And it was just really interesting. There were so many uniquely interesting people in the world. And what we have to do is figure out how do we merge? How do we merge what's in our heart that we love doing, that we love? I mean, the coolest thing in the world, Dan, I know you love comedy and making fun and all this stuff, but at the core of you is how can I help propel somebody up? I call it cred dust. How do we share somebody else's cred dust, right? And how do we do that and make money? And I believe under the framework of credibility, we can.
Yeah, I think, like I said, when I look at this stuff, because I came from, you know, an academic approach to this, where everything is laid out, it's been studied for a long time. People make advances, like Aristotle wrote about ethos. You know, there's tons of stuff in the rhetoric about ethos and about how you build it and what types of aspects of being a human being that people are going to want to know about you in order to assign you good credibility. Do you think, like, what about that? Like, I see a lot of people who get into thought leadership and business especially, but you also see it in spirituality and self-help and things like that, where people are just saying, they're just giving out information without it being attached to any type of academic or intellectual tradition, so that they don't, it's like they're just making it up as they go along. I mean, how do you avoid stuff like that? Because you're clearly somebody whose mind likes to stretch and think about things and come up with structures that you like and that you feel like are helpful to people. So what about that versus like if you were doing this Credibility Nation talk or whatever to a group of rhetoricians, they would shred you.
Awesome. Now that sounds like fun.
Yeah. You know, it's just because this is what they study. It'd be like, you know, if you do a talk about building a bridge to a bunch of engineers who build bridges, then they're going to be like, you know, you gotta, you gotta study bridges. So how do you walk that line between, you know, wanting to sort of bring that good communication energy to things, your own intellectual energy to them, and then the actual, you know, academic traditions that study this stuff?
So I'll say something slightly controversial.
Do it.
You know, the academic system and structure today is really outdated and archaic and antiquated. Today, the academic system from elementary school through typically through high school, even in some colleges, is meant to serve the industrial age human. We are meant, the way we are structured, the way the academic things are, is to create more Popeyes in the world. You know, the big arm Popeye, where all he does is go to the automotive manufacturer and he turns the socket wrench every sure. day.
Yeah, academic that instruction.
That is what academic institutions do today.
But what about like the academic resources that are there? You don't have to go through an institution to get to them. Like they're there in books, like they are literally sitting there.
Dude, that's the coolest thing in the world. You have at your fingertips, the world is in your toes. I mean, now I would say this is where it gets kind of funny. Like if you're a chemist, do you need to study and memorize all this stuff? If you're a doctor, do you need to study and memorize? Yeah, you need to understand and have a base knowledge. But here's what I'd like to say, and this is what came out of the interviews was really fascinating, is where do you get your PhD? Do you get it out of books or do you get it out of experience? And what in the business world, what wins out far over than anything else is experience. It's the PhD in the School of Hard Knocks. Now, there are professions where you need book smarts and book knowledge. And the fact is, those people who had the PhD in the School of Hard Knocks, a lot of them were successful, also read a lot or listened to a lot of books.
A lot of pretty smart, informed people.
Yeah. It's really an interesting thing. What did we do at the beginning of the conversation? I had no, like, we're live. Let me look up the definition of the word persuasion.
Persuasion, sure, yeah.
Right? Why? Because I know you said it. It felt funny to me when you said it. And I wanted to see what the dictionary said to say if I even felt comfortable enough with it. And we had a small conversation about it. And so I'm feeling comfortable, right? And the question becomes, why don't you do that? Somebody says something and they say, do you agree with this? Why would you possibly ever say yes if you don't know what you're agreeing to? If you don't look and Google that word right then and there and go, I don't get it or I understand it, right? So to answer your question, by the way, I'd be really curious whether we do it live or some other time to figure out why the rhetoricians would shred me, rhetoricians would shred me. That would be kind of fun to try. Because I don't have to win. It's not a win-lose, right? I don't mind being told where things I'm doing are not accurate. What I could tell you so far is out of a subset of the 596, close to 600 people, what I've been able to show people that if they just show themselves, like if you can articulate, here's the coolest thing. I use the word CPOP, that customer point of pain, the thing that 98% of people can't articulate. Your CPOP's your purpose. Your CPOP's your compass. If you could take your compass and allow people to actually see you, see that compass, guess what? They know who you are. As a matter of fact, I'll give you a great example.
Totally. I completely agree with that. I tell people all the time, when you work in Hollywood, there's so many people want to get into Hollywood. There's so many people want to get into entertainment, and they will come in and you'll ask, well, what are you looking for? And they're like, well, you know, I'm a producer and I direct and I act and I write. And I'm like, no, that's not what I need. Like in comedy writing, like if you work on talk shows, you write monologue jokes or you write sketches, you know, or maybe you write questions, or rants. And I need to know specifically what you want to do so that I can figure out how to help you. And if you can't articulate that for me, then I can't help you. I can't do anything for you. And so that's my first thing I do when people come to me looking for entertainment, you know, career help. I'm like, well, cool. Let's focus in on the one thing you really want, maybe two other little things so that you can tell people, then they know how to help.
So Dan, I'm going to make a teeny suggestion. It's really okay. You could actually send them to the book, send them to the TED Talk, or send them to Credibility Nation as a half hour course and say, what's your CPOP? Because I tell you a really interesting, so I'm doing this particular week, we're doing a 5-day challenge. So I happen to have people in the room and we're talking about 5-day challenges are things where you share different incremental things people can do on a daily basis and walk up a stairs. And by the end of the week, they're like, oh, this is really cool. How do I get more? And then you sell them more, right? In the day one, the partner I'm doing the challenge with invited me to his mastermind. So I went to his mastermind. There were 8 people in there and I shared some thoughts on credibility. And one of the things I shared is I shared the CPOP of somebody who is in the 5-day challenge. I don't know why it came out, but I came up with a word called cred dust. Cred dust is that magic that happens when you share somebody else's ideas, thoughts, or actions. I mean, everyone wins. So I shared her cred dust in the form of her CPOP. It was, you know, less than 10 words. I shared less than 10 words of somebody else to a group of 8 people, and 2 of them, 25%, said, hey, I want that. Can you make an intro? Like, how amazingly cool is that?
So what was it? Tell us the line.
Oh, parents who recognize their kids will grow up.
What does that mean?
Ah, so by the way, I so appreciate you saying that, because a good CPOP, the right next question is, tell me more. What does that mean? So in essence, she works with parents who recognize they're going to raise their kids in such a way that sometime the kids are going to grow up, leave the house, and you still want to be friends with them.
Yeah, cool. So how to raise kids so that you want to be friends with them?
I don't know if it's that or it's your interpretation, how to raise kids so they turn into good, productive humans in the world. I mean, you could decide what that is for you. And I think she's still working on creating her programs. I just found it really fascinating. And what's interesting is we're now having a conversation about that. Can somebody say that about you? Can someone say that about me? Mine is humans that want to be seen as credible. Now, that is so broad, Dan. I narrowed it for the short term for Credibility Nation, which is small businesses who feel invisible. All right. And so, you know, like, well, it's, you know, if you ask the next question, now you're giving me permission to spend a minute or two talking about what's next. Right. And that's what, to me, if we're wearing on our sleeves, like the thing that's interesting is, particularly with COVID, there's some people whose businesses have done unbelievable and some people who are just now gotten more and more into their shells and have gotten less business and now don't know what's next in life. It's really interesting, that dichotomy. And the thing is, people are asking for help. They're asking for support. But they're not like you. When they come to you and say, help me in the writing thing, and you say, what do you do? And they give you a whole bevy of stuff. And the good news is you say, no, that doesn't work. Tell me what you do or tell me what's important. So same sort of thing. If someone can truly articulate in 5 words, for instance, what they actually do, it's a lens. It's a set of lenses. Now what happens is you then you look to see how you show up in the world when you're not in a room. So I basically, one of the things I did with a book is I defined, I'd written the book and my writing partner is my chief content writer. So book was done, ready to go, almost hit the publish button. And there was something that was bothering me. What was bothering me is we used to still always, people still use it, but the difference between online and offline, So online is typically when you're, you know, your stuff, your website and your LinkedIn and your social media, and offline is typically when you're in person with somebody.
But you do both. Like you do a ton of like online Zooms and networking calls and things like that.
Absolutely. That's the problem, because the difference shouldn't be online, offline. What I ended up doing is changing the difference between synchronous and asynchronous, right? So we're on Zoom. We're technically online, but we're synchronous. You can ask a question.
Yeah, I can respond. We're dialoguing for sure. Yeah.
Right. And what happens for many business consultants, business professionals, certainly for salespeople, many people say, hey, get me in front of my client and I could sell. Just make sure you get me in front of the right clients. And then what happens is in today's world, because, are you ready? We'll go back to your past question. We have this in front of us and we could do research on anyone. We could do research on anything. What happens is before somebody will buy from you, before somebody even meets you, before somebody even wants to meet you, they're going to research how you show up asynchronously, right? They're going to see, how do you show up in and fill in the blank? It's whatever platform they use, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. Yeah,
they're definitely going to dive website. Into the world and see where you are, like how you exist in the digital space.
They're going to see you. And if they don't like what they see, or here's the most important stuff, if what they see doesn't reinforce who you say you are, they're going to move on to the next person. So Dan, what's fascinating is once you could articulate in a synchronous way, in five words or less, your CPOP, who you serve and the pain point you address, you then go back and look at how you show up asynchronously and you update it. And it's a beautiful lens.
Yeah, you definitely want those things to match for sure. It's always been interesting for me because I come from two strong worlds, like the academic rhetoric, intellectual world, and then the comic world. And a lot of times when I've done corporate stuff and I've done trainings and things like that, those two types of ethos, those two credibilities can fight with each other. Like comics typically aren't seen as intellectuals. You know, some are smart, but they don't lay things out in the way an intellectual or an academic would.
I've seen the Marvel movies.
What do you mean?
Oh man, I just love the entire Marvel series. I just love, and so many things in the comics are things that remember the Jetsons
comic series, like comedians are definitely devalued as far as expertise. Like comedy is not seen as like, that's not its main purpose. Its main purpose is to entertain, versus like the things you're doing. There's a lot of education in what you're doing, right? Seems like that's the main gist is you're selling information that you find valuable and you think people will find valuable and useful in their lives and in their business. So it's an information product. It's not really an entertainment product. You know, if you were to do this as, you know, with clowns and things like that, then it devalues a little bit your information about credibility. So those two types can fight a lot of times.
Okay. I can buy that.
Yeah. Pretty interesting. So if this all works for you, what's it look like in a year or 3 years?
I know what it looks like in my lifetime. In my lifetime, I can see my son who's 23, you know, I could see him and his family seeing the world as a better place than it is now, seeing the world. Like for me, when I interact with somebody and I get to really see who they are, I will do the contracts. But I'd rather shake the hand and just deliver what I say. I want that world. So what does it look like in a short period of time? By the end of this year, Credibility Nation itself needs to be self-sustaining. You know, so just having enough people, enough money coming in the door that it pays for itself versus my publishing company paying for it. Past that, there will be a point in time where Credibility Nation is an overnight success. I can't tell you if that's a year from now or 10 years from now. And so it's when the world recognizes credibility and what we're doing as an important element, when Credibility Nation is the good housekeeping seal of approval, that success. And there's probably, I've got a really huge roadmap of things that we can do. And when I said before, I don't want to be the king, here's what's really interesting. if you're doing something in the credibility space and you feel that incorporating or bundling that in with what Credibility Nation does, I want to play with you. I want to learn. I want to learn and grow. And listen, you can still run your stuff. We'll figure out what the right financial model is and we'll make stuff happen. And that to me, that's the world that we need to live in. It's not the world that we live in today.
Well, it's interesting, man. I've enjoyed talking to you. I think you you work in some spaces that get complicated. You know, they get intertwined with like business and doing good for the world and trying to figure out, you know, a brand and giving out good, solid, honest information. You know, I really admire the fact that you're in there, you're doing the work, you're fighting the fight, and you know, you've built something, and you got to give it up to you for doing that. That's super cool.
Dan, thank you. Thank you. And listen, I if we ever decide that it makes sense for us to play together, you always have an open door.
Well, I appreciate it. And give yourself one more plug before we're out. Tell people where to go.
You know, the most easy or relevant thing is just creditabilitynation.com. If you want a little bit more of this or want to see a more structured, formal approach, just either go to YouTube or go to TED, type Mitchell Levy TED Talk. The talk is called "We Are Losing Our Humanity and I'm Tired of Sitting Around and Watching It." And when you see that, you will see a very simple, not easy to deliver, a very simple solution to how we become more human. And the best way to do that is just by living and acting credibly.
I like it. Yeah, you will not have trouble finding Mitchell Levy if you go looking online. He has some good stuff out there, so go check it out. Thanks for being here, Mitchell. Thanks for hanging out. Super appreciate it. Everybody get out there and persuade some people. As always, you know, they need it. And we will see you next time on Rhetoric Warriors Podcast.
Dan, I loved it. Thank you.
Yeah, man.
Take care, everyone. Bye now.